All right. Let's start in the questions of chapter 37. We'll go over those. And we'll probably review chapter 38's questions, then go into chapter 39. We should all be fairly familiar with chapter 39, so we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it. Chapter 37, question 1. How old was Joseph when he was sold into slavery? Somebody read that verse.
The generation of Jacob, Joseph being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. And the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report.
Okay. Now, between verse 2 and the time he is sold, you have in verse 2 him bringing a bad report at age 17. You then have Jacob making him a coat of many colors. You then have one dream, a second dream, the rest of his brothers going out to tend the flocks, then Joseph being sent out after them. So the answer, according to verse 2, is we don't know. But he was at least 17 years old. Because verse 2 is separated by a number of events before you actually have him sold into slavery. But you know he was at least 17 when he was sold, because verse 2 says he's 17 when this first event occurs. Okay? Let's not overburden the text by making it say things it doesn't say, but we can at least draw from it the conclusion he was at least 17.
Less than 30,
because he was in, second in command and, made second in command by Pharaoh at age 30. So, we know that he was between 17 and 30 when he was sold into slavery. Yes, it was a trick question. All right, I admit. What caused Joseph's brothers to hate him so much? All right. The specific statement is that they hated him because his father loved him more than all of them. So that's the main cause for the hate. Now, the dreams are not going to help anything. They're going to make things considerably worse. But the main issue is Jacob loved Joseph more than he loved all the rest of them. And that was the reason why they could not speak peaceably to him. Number 3, describe Joseph's first dream and the reaction to it.
Their sheaves bowed down to his
in the field. Okay. So the sheaves are standing upright, his remains upright, the others bowed down to him. What was the reaction?
They hated him because they thought that he was saying that they were bowing him.
All right. So they hated him before. They couldn't say anything peaceably to him before, and now it's worse.
It's interesting that it says in this translation that Joseph's sheep rose up.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say that in the Bible?
Yeah.
So that was just that Joseph was
going to
rise up in
right.
Egypt.
Right. Okay. Describe Joseph's second dream and the reaction to it.
Sun, moon, and stars made a
decent
Okay.
I hated it
more. All right. So the sun, the moon, and 11 stars basically bow down to him, and now it's not he's another planetary system or anything like that. They bow down to him. There's no losing the indication of what's going on here. Question 4. Now, it's interesting because of the timeline of these events and not being able to always know whether Moses is giving us events in chronological order, that it's possible, keep that term in mind, possible that these events occurred when Joseph's mother, Rachel, was still alive. The indication of that would be the sun, the moon, and the 11 stars bow down to him, and his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you dream? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed bow down to the earth before you?" So Jacob's interpretation of the dream is that it's Jacob and Rachel and his brethren that will bow down. Now, some have said, well, this Rachel could already have passed away, and Jacob is referring to the other mothers. I think it's very clear that he says, your mother. It's not an indication of the other wives of Jacob, but your mother. So that, at least to me, gives an indication that these events occurred while Rachel was still alive. Which isn't unreasonable at all when you look at the timeline that we've seen, that Jacob came back into the land and for approximately 20 years was in this upper region before he went down to where Isaac was when Isaac died. So there's a good indication, and that being said, if he's anywhere around 17 years old, but had already been born before they left Padan Aram, that would mean that Rachel hadn't died yet, Isaac hadn't died yet, and there's a possibility that Benjamin hadn't been born yet when Joseph is sold into slavery. Or that his mother was pregnant with Benjamin when he sold into slavery, but had not been born. So all of these things are factors that this passage seems to indicate one way or another as a possibility looking at the timeline. And that's just something that, to me, is interesting.
Could it be that his father misinterpreted?
Certainly could.
Joseph was really the dreamer and the interpreter. Mm-hmm. Joseph never gives the interpretation.
Correct. That is a good point, though the statement would still indicate Rachel's being alive, whether it was a correct interpretation of the dream or not. That is a good point to keep in mind.
I didn't get her point. I'm sorry.
The fact that Jacob may have misinterpreted Joseph's dream by applying that to himself and Rachel, though it would seem logical. And a point concerning that is, with it being a dream and the indication of it, Rachel wouldn't be alive when they went down into Egypt. Rachel would never bow down before Joseph. And so, just simply a thought concerning Jacob maybe jumping to conclusions about the connection there. Don't know. Number 5, which brother kept Joseph from getting killed, and what was his motivation for stopping them? Reuben?
He was the oldest.
All right. He was the oldest.
He didn't have the blood on their hands.
Okay. He wanted to return him to his father. And as far as the text itself, he desired to be the one to return him to his father. Is the statement there in verse 22, I believe, that he might deliver him out of their hands and bring him back to his father. Number 6, which brother suggested selling Joseph instead of killing him?
Judah
did. Number 7, discuss whether or not the brothers lied to their father about Joseph's disappearance.
Yes.
Okay. Explain.
They led him to believe.
Okay. So, lying can be nonverbal? Because they didn't tell him.
They took
that Joseph had died.
No, but they said, "Is this not your son?" Well, they killed a kid and dipped him in blood so that and told him.
It was
that a beast? Oh, well, the father just assumed that it was a beast that killed him.
Okay.
What's the difference between deception and lying?
Sometimes there's none and sometimes there is. You can deceive someone without lying to them. You cannot lie to someone without attempting to deceive them. Well, you can in the sense of a lie, strictly defined, is something you have told someone.
A blatant falsehood.
Right. Here's a contrast. Is it deception in a football game when the quarterback tries to hide the ball and fakes a handoff and then throws it? Is he intending to deceive?
Yes.
Is the context totally different?
Yes.
Is that a sin?
No.
Okay. It depends on which team's doing it. All right. In the book of Joshua, when the Israelites feign running away from Ai in order to draw them out of the city, and then the group that was behind the city comes in and takes the city behind them, did they deceive them?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Did God command them to sin since it was God's idea? No. Okay, so there's a difference between deception in its full scope and definition and lying. All right, lying is always looked at in Scripture as being wrong. Lying is always deception, but not all deception is lying. Okay, so you've got two terms. One is broader. One is not as broad. Lying almost always clearly involves a verbal expression of a lie. You generally don't describe someone as lying when they haven't said anything.
So this would be more deception than lying.
It would be deception. Now,
they lied about the coat, though.
All right.
They said, this have we found.
It is too.
All right.
Whether
so,
be God's sons or not.
There you go. All right. So in that, they did lie. Either way, what I wanted us to discuss is the fact that you can deceive sinfully without ever explicitly stating a lie. Though they did lie. They both deceived and they lied, and they then attempted to comfort him. Alright, there's the interesting part is they sought continually over the process of time to comfort him, and he refused to be comforted by them as a result of this that happened. Bill?
The result is the same, where it's lying or deception. It's the same thing.
Right.
There you
right.
go.
It's sinful either way, and especially in this situation. So I just wanted to have a wee bit of discussion about this idea because, people will act as though sometimes, well, I just didn't tell them the truth. You lied to him.
Lie by admission.
Uh-huh. So that was the reason for the question. Yes, they lied. And yes, they deceived. And yes, they sinned. Number 8. Who did the traitors, which, by the way, were Ishmaelites, as they're described earlier in the chapter, and then described as Midianites later in the chapter, should give you an indication of the connection with the families, who did the traitors sell Joseph to? Potiphar in Egypt. All right, chapter 38 questions very quickly. Judah's relationship with the Adullamite led to the events recorded in this chapter. Judah's relationship with what Adullamite led to the events recorded in this chapter?
Hira.
H-I-R-A-H. Name Judah's 3 sons born by the daughter of Shua, the Canaanite. Onan, and... Shua. I know that's right, I just can't... find it? Sheila, there we go. Verse 11 and prior to that. Okay. Which son of Judah would be in the lineage of Christ? Nope.
Perez.
Look at the end of the chapter. It's the son of Judah by Tamar, not by Shua, that would be in the lineage of Christ. If you compare that with Matthew chapter 1. Matthew chapter 1 verse... Three, Judah begot Perez and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begot Hezron, and Hezron begot Ram on down. So the son of Judah that was in the lineage of Christ was the son of Tamar, who should have been Judah's grandson, except for the sin that took place. All right? Why was Tamar, quote, more righteous than I, according to Judah?
Judah didn't keep his promise for his young son to marry her.
Because Judah did not give Sheila to Tamar as a husband and keep his promise. That does not, by the way, indicate that Tamar was actually righteous in the situation. There was nothing righteous about her action, but as far as Judah was concerned, she was more righteous than he was.
I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Was that commonplace for a man in those days just to have a family, just to go into a town and pick up a prostitute? Was that part of the custom?
It seemed to have been, at least in the land of Canaan, because of the indications that she specifically dressed as a cult prostitute that would have been part of the Canaanite worship and would have been the interactions between such prostitutes and an individual would have been for the benefit of the field and the land and all of that sort of thing. The indication is, yes, it was a very common practice, though it certainly should not have been among the children of Jacob. Name the sons of Judah by Tamar.
Perez and
Zerah. Or Zerah. Who did Judah give the, quote, gift to the... Who did Judah send to give the gift to the prostitute?
Hira,
the Adullamite. As we mentioned last week, every time you see his name, there's trouble. And that's going to be the case throughout this chapter. Contrast the actions of Judah in Genesis 38 to Joseph in Genesis 39.
Judah was with a prostitute and Joseph refused adultery.
All right. Judah saw an opportunity to sin, and he took it. Judah thought that no one would know. Judah didn't think any shame would be brought upon him as a result of it.
And he left his family all purpose.
All right.
He left his family behind all purpose.
Uh-huh. Judah was separated from his family, but it was because he chose to leave. Joseph didn't have any choice in the matter. And just in general, you see Judah's actions considerably farther from serving God.